Well, happy Friday to you. Welcome in, Michigan Panthers preview. Jay, what's going on, man?
Hey,
how you doing?
It's Friday. It's sunny in Michigan.
It's Friday. It's sunny. We got a game tomorrow.
We have a game tomorrow. Nightcap.
A little nightcap down at Ford Field. And we're looking forward to that one, and we'll talk about that game in a little while. But as you heard the big voice say, we are on remote today from the Corner Ballpark presented by Adyen. And I'm stating a fact. This is a crown jewel in the city of Detroit. This facility at Powell is second to none. Find me another facility like this around the country.
You know, you're absolutely right, Chris. This is a state-of-the-art facility, and the really cool thing about it is all the history that's here. You know, you can go on a tour of this facility and learn so much about it, and that's why we're excited, you know, to have the opportunity to be here. And, you know, parents listening, this is a place to, you know, sign your kids up, bring your kids up to be part, you know, play on some historical venue like this.
Right at the corner of Michigan and Trumbull, right where the Tigers used to play here at Tiger Stadium. Well, we got a couple of really special guests with us. David Green was the Director of Programs and Facilities for Detroit Powell. Dave, nice to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having us. Thanks for coming out to the Corner Ballpark.
Well, it's our pleasure to be here. And Alan Hughes, former defensive lineman for the Michigan Panthers in 83 and 84. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So we were talking a little bit before the show, and we'll talk about your playing days at the Silver Dome. but you know, it's funny because the relationship that you, Alan, and David here at Powell, the relationship goes back a long time with not only you two, but then your involvement in Powell.
Yes. I mean, I've been knowing David years. I used to be his substitute teacher one year when that was off season.
How was he as a student?
Fine.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
But my mother was the principal at St. Martin de Porres High School, and I was. She needed a substitute teacher, and she said, "Come on down, help me out." And so I just stood there and kept the classroom in order. Basically, that's all it was.
How was Mrs. Hughes as a principal? Watch it, David. You better watch it now.
Oh, man. First of all, it's the Detroit St. Martin de Porres High School.
Okay.
His mom was no joke. She still is no joke. She is the mother of Detroit St. Martin de Porres High School. So, yeah, she was our disciplinarian, and she brought her son in. And it was amazing because, you know, here we have a professional football player standing in front of us. As
not
teenagers.
Intimidating at all.
Man, I tell you, wow, it was quite the show.
Alan, talk to us about your involvement with Powell.
Well, I started in Powell when I was like 9 years old, 10 years old. My father was the second in charge here. He was one of the first officers to be off the street breaking into Powell, and that's when they was breaking in. I mean, going to different gyms, St. Cecilia, St. Bridget. Mm-hmm. I remember the first headquarters down on Mildrum, green and white building. I still have that in my mind over 45 years ago, 55 years ago almost. But it was a white and green building, and Powell just gave me a lot of opportunities. My father was involved. I learned how to play football, learned how to play basketball, a little bit of baseball, but Powell was just... The interaction that we had with the officers just made it more family-oriented because of the cops were just being genuine good friends, like big brothers to us. So that's one good thing about it all.
And, I mean, you obviously played sports as a kid, and having that type of environment, I got to imagine, is pretty special.
Yeah, it absolutely is special. Having a place that you can go, that you can call it, you know, your home turf, your home court, your home field, and have that safe, you know, be safe and have that, you know, welcoming, especially, you know, and, you know, I'm going to throw this to you, David, here. You know, how important, especially in today's society, you know, integrating the kids with the police and having a place like this?
Oh, man, it's just as important today as it was back when Calvin's or Alan's dad started everything, right? I mean, it's in the 67 civil unrest that happened. You know, Willie Horton talks about seeing the smoke rising from the walls out there in Old Tiger Stadium in the community, and then going out and actually stopping people from looting and burning and destroying the city. Now, in the wake of, like, George Floyd, I mean, Detroit was kind of immune to some of the civil unrest that was existed in other parts of the country. Why? Because of what Detroit Powell has done in terms of the community policing. And, you know, the greatest partnership we have is with the Detroit Police Department. And so a lot of our kids are getting those same interactions that, Alan just spoke of being, like, big brothers and friends. And now we got cops and kids working together and coming together in a family-like way. So,
well, and I think just from what I see, this is more than just sports.
Absolutely,
there are lifelong lessons that you're learning, whether it's teamwork, whether it's leadership, and you're doing it in a beautiful place that you can really develop kids along the way.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got a lot of youth enrichment programs that you'll probably hear about a little bit later from mm-hmm. our youth enrichment coordinator. But, you know, one of the prideful programs that we have right now is a program called Critical Conversations, born out of the pandemic, where we put police officers and kids in the same room. Kids don't know that they're police officers. And after about the second or third interaction, they find that they're police officers, and their jaws drop because they find that these officers are just human. They're just as normal, you know, every day got the same fears, same likes, same dislikes. And so they build relationships on common ground first. And then they talk about community policing and the roles of police and all of the other things that are, you know, a lot of the police officers have great learnings from the community because they're getting these answers from the kids about, you know, what's troubling them, what their fears are. And, you know, we kind of help dispel some of those myths that are out there. And the police officers get a lot of takeaway from it as well.
Aside from the sports stuff, you've got, and we'll talk to Justin Cook coming up as well. But you've got summer camps that run throughout the summer.
Yep.
You've got girls empowerment.
Yep.
Which is wonderful.
Yep.
You've got Boss Up Boot Camp.
Yep.
Talk to me about kind of the importance of having some of these different types of camps or programs in your arsenal that you're able to use to reach some of these kids.
Well, you know, sports obviously is the hook that gets them in, and all of the other youth enrichment stuff that Justin's going to talk about later. You just mentioned some of it there. All of these things are designed to keep kids off the streets. It's designed to give kids something to do. So in the time frame, especially in the summer, where kids are, you know, at home, sometimes alone, oftentimes alone, that's when we find ourselves in the most trouble, you know, with our youth. After school programs, always very important. And I know I played PAL in the 70s and 80s. Right around the 1980s, 81, 82 time frame, a lot of programs, federal funded programs were cut, and that put a lot of kids in positions of having nothing to do. And eventually, as we all know, kids will find something to do and won't always be the positive things that we want them to do. So
right.
That's where PAL is the gap filler in that regard. And, you know, the relationship with the police officers definitely helped that as well.
We got to take a break. You guys going to hang around a little while?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to talk Michigan Panthers, obviously, and we're going to continue talking about Detroit PAL here at the Corner Ballpark, presented by Addy. And as we continue right here on WJR, don't go anywhere. Just a spectacular facility here at the Corner Ballpark, presented by Addy and JU. And, you know, there are a lot of kids out there now, but, I mean, can we get out there a little bit?
Yeah, we want to get out there, run around on the turf there. It's a beautiful
– kick the ball around a little bit. We got soccer going on right now.
And a great scoreboard. And, you know, you can't find this, you know, in a lot of places. I'm from the Buffalo area in New York there. And, you know, we don't have anything, you know, like spectacular like this. And don't get me wrong, I love my city, but, you know, this is just absolutely incredible.
Yeah. No, I think that there are a lot of cities that would feel that way, too. A little envious of the good folks here at Detroit PAL. David Greenwood's with us with PAL. And Alan Hughes, former defensive lineman for the Michigan Panthers. Now, last week we spoke to Bobby Hebert. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yes.
Do you know who that is?
I've heard of him once or twice.
Okay. So when you guys won the championship back in 83, he said that he thought that your team was probably a middle-of-the-road NFL team. You could have beat some NFL teams back then.
Yes, we could have. We had a good quarterback. We had good running backs, wide receivers that could stretch the field. defense that ran around crazy and made big plays. So
no hesitation there. Did you see that, J.E.? Not a bit of hesitation.
Yeah. I really, looking back at that team, and I totally agree with that. I think that was a, you know, middle-of-the-road NFL team. And now, like, how would you say the difference is now with the USFL? Because it's more of guys, you know, that second chance or, you know, guys who didn't get the opportunity, you know.
Or trying to get back in.
Yeah, or trying to get back in. You know, guys that didn't have the opportunity to go to the combine and, you know, showcase their skills and everything. Like a guy like Josh Butler that's playing for the Panthers right now. Now it's more like a developmental league there. How do you think that difference is?
When I played, the players that we had players that played in the NFL already and some good players coming out of college. So it was a good mixture of talent coming together. A 3-4 year veteran with a rookie, and it was exciting. They helped us grow up quicker. After three games, they changed the whole offensive line with the Michigan Panthers. We went and got Ray Penny, Tyrone McGriff, Tom Dornbrook, and you know, just made a better offensive line. We started smashing people in the mouth. And then after that, we just start the confidence started building up, and Bobby was standing straight up, and he was able to find Anthony and Derek Holloway, and then we had John Williams running back, and Lacey, yep. and then good old Cleo Miller from Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
So those were some good players that we received, and then we got a couple offensive defensive backs, Oliver Davis and Clarence Chapman, that played in the league too. So he brought all those guys together, and it was a good mix. The head coach was good, Jim Stanley. He knew how to handle the players and keep everybody straight. And once McGriff and Tyrone McGriff and Ray Penny came here, everything went, you know, we started smashing people.
Stanley, I think, said he doesn't want any porch dogs.
That's
he
right.
wants dogs that can go hunt.
That's right.
And you guys went hunting.
That's right.
And you know, it's funny because I look at what the league is doing now. And not only is it a, you know, there is certainly an element of what the old USFL was, right?
Yes. Yes.
Where you're taking pro players and you're giving them another outlet to play.
Right.
But this new version of the USFL I particularly like. And I like some of the rule changes that they made. And they've been, you know, Mike Pereira told us in the offseason that they're working with the NFL on some of these changes to maybe make the game safer.
Right.
Or improve the game or speed up the flow of the game, which I love. But the new USFL also focuses a lot on families, on kids. You know, it's hard for a working family to go buy four tickets to go to a pro game. Here, you're getting pro football. You're getting pro players, and you get it for, you know, $10 a piece down at Ford Field. It's an incredibly family friendly event, the game, and I think that resonates with a lot of people, especially in a place like Detroit, where I think people will be taking advantage of this.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, $10, $20 to come down to a game and.
Forget about it.
And bringing the whole family. Yeah. That's the ticket for one Lions game.
Right.
So it's a great opportunity to bring a family atmosphere down to the Ford Field and see a quality product on the football field.
And David, great opportunity to bring some of these kids down there to see what can be as long as you work hard, as long as you are physically but mentally, spiritually, academically – when all of those things align, you can do something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just giving the kids an opportunity to see what's possible. You know, at PAL, that's what we thrive on is trying to give kids access and exposure. And this gives kids access to, Ford Field that they may not have had otherwise
right.
because of the other price points of, say, a Detroit Lions game. No knock on them, but, you know, it's
sure.
a different product,
sure.
right?
Sure.
And so the kids get a chance to come down, and I'm just hearing now that we're going to get a chance to take some kids down on the field on Saturday. So,
yeah.
You know, we play our Ford Field championship game for our football
yep.
league at Ford Field, and that gives our players an opportunity to, you know, see Ford Field in a different mm-hmm. way as well. But, you know, this gives all of our kids, whether, you know, whatever sport they play, an opportunity to get down to Ford Field, see the space, and, you know, not put mom and dad in an awkward financial position.
Sure.
Yeah, question for both of you. This for Alan as a player. I'll get to you about that, you know, same question. But, Dave, you know, when the USFL announced that they were going to these hub cities, and Detroit was announced as one of those cities, the entire city, a lot of leaders in the city, like yourself, you were at the advisory meeting, Fox execs were there, and it was just people, you know, throwing ideas on how to make this something special, you know, and, you know, like, a bunch of different ideas were going about, like, you know, what can we do to enhance the fan experience? What can we do to enhance the family experience? What can we do to enhance the player experience for it? So when you came out, you know, last week when the Panthers made their home debut, coming in 2-0, and, you know, what did it mean, you know, to see the largest crowd, you know, in USFL, you know, this season so far? Detroit has been, you know, the host of the largest crowd, over 15,000 people, you know, at the at Ford Field, making an electric feeling, you know, bringing in Big E as an MC, that crowd excitement atmosphere. You know, as a community member, a leader of PAL, and as a former player, you know, what was that feeling like?
Man, I mean, hats off to everybody who's, you know, had a hand in developing this and bringing this to back to fruition 40 years later, because a lot of the kids today, they don't remember anything. I'm 54 years old, and I remember this guy playing, right? And so, I mean, they stuck with some things that they knew that worked, and I think one of the things we talked about earlier was that helmet. That helmet is iconic. I mean, that Panthers helmet, I hear kids now talking about, that is the sweetest helmet I've seen, right? So, I mean, that says a lot. And then, you know, seeing all of the kids and the families that were there last week was phenomenal. And, you know, I heard the first game wasn't as big of a crowd, but that just tells me how big football is in the Detroit market. I mean, right. To support the Lions the way we do, mm-hmm. right? Win or lose, we support the Lions, right? But then to come out and 40 years later support a program like the Michigan Panthers in the way that we did on the first night out, I'm really proud as a Detroiter.
What did that mean to you?
It means a lot to me. I just feel that if they came back and brought in Bobby Hebert and Anthony Carter and said we was going to be in town and had a 83-84 reunion team, mm-hmm. you'll have 30,000 people there down at Ford Field. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they people still connect with those with us and with them championship. We were the last professional team to win a football championship in Detroit. Michigan Panthers.
Is that on your business card? If I were you, I would.
You know, that's a great trivia question. What is the last team, professional team, to win a football championship?
Yeah, that is
in
really
the city
good.
Of Detroit. Or in the state of Michigan.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I got another trivia for you guys.
Uh-oh.
Where was the last place?
Hold on, let me just 1 second. All right, go ahead.
Last place that the Tigers and the Lions won a championship.
Last place.
Right, yeah.
Right here.
Right here at the Corning Ballpark.
Mm.
Old Tiger Stadium. Lions won the championship in, I think it was 54 or whatever year it was. 57. And the Tigers won in 84 right here.
Oh, wow.
Right here. Where those kids are kicking a soccer ball.
That's it.
Do they know that? Because I feel like that's something they should know.
They should.
Real quick, Alan, so, you know, you played, you know, D-end.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you know, the defensive end position, you had, you know, contain, outside arm free, you know, don't lose contain, don't do all. The game has totally evolved now. Now you got guys like positions named rush end and, you know, all those different things.
Specialties.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on how that defensive end position has, you know, evolved around time?
It's like anything else. Nothing's going to stay the same. Everything's always going to be revolving to get faster. The game is faster. The guys are leaner, and their main goal is sacking the quarterback, putting pressure on the quarterback. It's not about making run tackles. It's about sacking the quarterback, getting upfield, disrupting him, and making the plays.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the game has evolved. You know, guys are leaner, bigger. So I have to give you some grief here, because when we were talking off air, you know, I was talking about, you know, my playing day. You looked at me up and down. You said, what did you play, offensive guard? No,
you,
I was a running back.
You did like to hit him, though, I imagine.
So I appreciate that. The game has evolved. You know, guys are leaner and bigger now.
I thought you was offensive guard.
You know what? That's one of the most athletic positions on the line. You know, that guard. You have to pull and you know, all right. That. So I'll take that.
Yeah.
Could you play guard?
No.
All right.
It's hard to have a running back try to get on the front.
I mean, I agree. They don't want to be up front.
They're not going to
do
that.
They don't want to be up front. Dave Greenwood, thank you for being with us, but thank you for having us here.
Well, thanks for coming. I appreciate you guys, really.
And Alan Hughes, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
You got the helmet still?
Still have a helmet. I have a little shrine of everything I have. My wife, we have a nice little museum.
There you go.
In my basement, all my helmet, jerseys, and awards and so forth. It's just great to be a part of that era.
Yeah.
You know, and playing for there and with the Lions and so. And just great. It's just playing football. It helped me create who Alan Hughes is, just being a former athlete, knowing how to go get it.
Yeah.
Make things happen.
Well, next we have to just set you up with a Twitter account now so you can show that stuff off.
Yeah. First and only tweet, the shrine. Alan, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, got to take a break. We're talking Panthers next right here on WJR. All right, welcome back. Live from the Corner Ballpark, presented by Adient, which, by the way, is home to the Paul W. and Kim Smith Family Conference Room. Obviously, all the great work Paul does with his golf outing and raising money for Pal in part. He and Kim do a wonderful job. So it's a nice little nod to the work that he's done here as well. Tough loss last week.
Yeah, it definitely was. Disappointing loss.
Disappointing loss. I think the team was disappointed as well. Because, look, quite frankly, we've seen them play better. But this was a different game, I think. I mean, you know, DeAndre Johnson was getting the ball out quick. And they had a couple of big plays early. And you know, when you get into a hole like that, it's really hard to dig yourself out, right? Over a college game, a pro game, but in the USFL, where the clock's running, possessions are at a premium, and they just found themselves in a hole early, but still, even towards the end of the game, they had an opportunity to at least tie the game, and you know, some personal fouls and penalties came into play, but I was heartened by the fact that they got back, they were at least in a position to get themselves back in the mix. But I don't think anybody on that roster, players, coaches, were happy with the performance.
Yeah, no. Players, coaches were not happy. You know, I had the opportunity, you know, I talked to this week, I spoke a little bit to corner Josh Butler, you know, the former Michigan State Spartan and the Panthers corner here. And, you know, there is that sense of disappointment, you know, from that game. But I think going into the game, you know, it was – You know this. We've been there. We've been around these players. We talked to them, and we talked to some of the coaches. And one of the big things was going home 2-0.
Yeah,
that was the statement that they wanted to
make. Yeah, you want to have a nice crowd coming back.
Yeah, you want so this is going to be the largest crowd, you know, in the USFL this season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's playing at your home. You know, all the hype, the excitement, and everything like that. And I think for an athlete, from going back to my playing days, when you want something so bad, sometimes you tend to play out of yourself.
Sure.
You know, you can't settle in and play as yourself because you want to deliver so much to the home crowd that's there supporting you. And I think at the beginning of the game, that was the issue. You know, and once they started to settle in, then you saw them try to make that, they made that comeback a little bit and started to gain that momentum. But then with that, what hurt was those self-inflicted wounds. You know, you go, you get a big play for a first down, and next thing you know, there's a false start penalty.
Yeah.
You know, all those mental errors that comes into play. So you can't win football games like that. So it was definitely was a disappointing game, but you know Coach Nolan. You know the type of guy that he is and this type of team and culture he's cultivating here. I think they're going to be ready to come back out tomorrow night.
Yeah, I agree. And he told me, a couple of weeks ago, he said, look, I don't mind my defense playing aggressive. I don't mind being aggressive. I don't always mind pass interference calls or different things like that because it shows you're being aggressive, right?
It
shows that you're getting after it.
Exactly.
But it's the procedural penalties, it's the personal fouls, which he told me the other day. He said, look, the problem with those type of penalties, especially when you stack them on top of each other, football's a team sport, and those are selfish penalties. Those are penalties because you can't keep your cool under wraps, and it hurt them. It hurt them, and they weren't able to at least bring the game in a position where they could strike.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, football is the ultimate team sport. You know, it's the only sport where it takes 11 guys to work together for 6 seconds to gain positive yards.
Right.
You know, if you have 11 guys, you work together for 6 seconds and you gain 1 yard, that's a positive play.
Right.
You know, there's no other sport like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you have guys playing outside of that, you know, I had a coach that always said, we want to be an us, we, our team, not an I, me, mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you start getting those personal foul penalties, you know, those late hits out of bounds, those getting into those scuffles and getting, you know, those chippy penalties.
Sure.
You turn to a I, me, mine kind of guy, an I, me, my team, as opposed to an us, we, our team.
And those teams don't generally do as well.
The I, me, my teams do not do as well.
So the other thing I think that was significant coming out of that game, late in that game, was Reggie Corbin getting hurt. And I don't know what his status is going into tomorrow night's game against Memphis down at Ford Field, 7:30 showtime here on WJR, if you're not going to the game, which I also would recommend. But, you know, he is an important part of this offense. And for as well, I think, as the offensive line blocked in the first couple of weeks, you know, there were some struggles in week three. You know, part of that you credit the opposition, but Reggie getting hurt late in that game, I think, took a little bit of air out of the balloon, and it felt like there was just one less weapon you could use in those situations.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, Reggie's one of the heart. He's the heart and soul of this team. The week previously, he had 137 yards on the ground,
a couple touchdowns,
and what happened? Josh Love flourished off that
yeah.
because you know now as a defense, you're playing to stop the run, mm-hmm. and that opens up a lot of things. We know the Panthers love to use their tight ends. Mm-hmm. You know, you come into a heavy personnel set, and you know here comes the guys coming downhill thinking it's a run, and you can pop those guys out. So that was a huge part of it. And also, too, what we have to realize is the USFL is not like an NFL roster. You don't have, you know, 53 guys that you carry on the roster.
Right.
You know, there's 40-some guys game day. They have two running backs.
Right.
So now, you know, with Corbin getting hurt, now Scott has to be the guy to carry the load for the team. And, you know, fatigue sets in.
Yep.
You know, he's an every down back now. He can't, you know. You know, is he saving something, you know, in pass protection when it's not a run play? You know, and breakdowns happen that way. So the importance of Reggie coming back is absolutely huge. And, you know, like we talked to the GM, Steve,
yep.
you can make 8 moves a year.
Right.
You know, so are they going to make a move to bring another running back in? If they do, what do they do with Reggie? Those are the questions that, you know, we have to still get answers to.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Defensively, look, I you know, they gave up 3 touchdowns in their first 3 series, but then they went punt, fumble, and then later gave up a late touchdown. But they rallied, and when you deal with an opportunistic defense like the Panthers have, you never really feel like you're out of it, and they settled into a groove, which again I think is a good sign, even when you're down early, you're down big early, and your offense isn't quite clicking. You still were still able to lean on that defense for the better part of half of that game.
Yeah, you're right. With the Panthers defense, they know now around the league that they're an aggressive defense. You know, if you're an offensive coordinator game planning for the Michigan Panthers defense, you're going to do misdirections. You're going to do things to get the ball out of your quarterback's hands faster. You're going to do screen passes to use their attacking downfield against them. And I think we saw that early. You know, Johnson, he got the ball out of his hands. They ran RPOs. But it came – and then once they settled in and got punt, fumble – what we saw was the offense didn't give them enough time to rest. The defense was on the field way too much in that game on Sunday.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll talk more about this game coming up tomorrow next. Also, we are here at the Corner Ballpark presented by Adient. We'll talk to some of the other good folks here at Detroit Pal next on WJR. All right, welcome back. Kickoff for Game 4 of the Michigan Panthers tomorrow, 7:30.
Already Game 4.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. No.
I don't even know where that went in 4 weeks.
It's a long way from Memphis.
It's a long way from Memphis. You know, I don't know how you look at this game. Showboat's 0-4. They're having some quarterback issues. I just kind of look at this as a get right week. I know maybe people were left wondering, you know, how good this team is and those things. I can tell you they're better than what we saw Saturday or Sunday. And I think they're kind of out to prove that. And I imagine when you lose a game as a player, you want to get right back out. You kind of want to right that wrong. And I just think, you know, a winless team, kind of no leadership at the quarterback spot, first-year head coach. I think this is kind of get right week for the Panthers.
A winless team is a scary team.
True.
They have nothing to lose. You know, they're coming in here. And Coach Todd Haley, you know, for the Showboats mm-hmm. there, he's an offensive mastermind.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so I would not take this team lightly. They're going to come in because they heard the buzz. They heard Detroit's the spot to be. They know it's going to be an electric crowd, and these guys are going to try to put something on tape so they can play at that next level.
All right, Jay, you think the Panthers are going to lose?
I did not think they're going to lose.
That's great.
I'm just saying, you can't go into that thinking because it's an 0-4 team that you can just roll your helmet out there and be successful.
Well, you're the smart one, so I defer to you. Also, Justin Cook is with us, the Youth Enrichment Coordinator in Powell Youth Voice Council lead. He joins us here.
Thank you.
As well, Justin, nice to have you with us.
Pleasure.
This is a fantastic facility. We've been talking about it for a while. But I think one of the important aspects of Detroit Powell is a lot of the different programs that you guys offer, because you have stuff running throughout the summer. You have, you know, a girls empowerment camps. You've got the boss boot camp. Like, all of these things, how important are these? And I'd just like to maybe have you expand on some of these offerings that Detroit Powell has.
Yeah, they're super important. I mean, when I think about myself and my life and how impactful PAL programs have been, I'm a PAL kid myself. So
okay.
As an alumni, thinking back to the years that, you know, I got to benefit from all of these tremendous resources, the community, having exposure to law enforcement and having the academic and educational programs that PAL offers, you know, it's huge. It's really life-changing. So I can't understate that. And, you know, as far as the different programs that we have coming up, I think they're even bigger and better than anything that was going on when I was a kid. So, and you know, that just is a testament to the community. You know, we have our staff, starting with our leadership team first. It all starts with leadership, and then our staff and our volunteers and our, you know, all of our corporate partners, all the people that really make this thing work. You know, it's an incredible thing to see and to be a part of. Is, you know, I love it.
Yeah. So, you know, when someone come in and they look and you're driving by, you know, you see sports field, you see turf, you see soccer nets, goalposts, you know, all those different things there. But there's more to that, you know, being in Powell here. And, you know, you talk about these enrichment programs. And I always, you know, I'm one of the biggest advocates of, you know, being a well-rounded athlete.
Yeah.
You know, as an athlete, proven that you're more than a number running down the field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? You know, you say it, you hear other people that's been through the Powell program say, hey, mm-hmm. I was a Powell kid. And that's like a badge of honor.
Absolutely.
You know, so what does that mean? You know, having these, you know, girls empowerment series, these camps and everything like that. That's not, you know, sports related, mm-hmm. but it's a developmental relation.
Yeah. Being a PAL kid is, you know, it's about excellence in sports. But and one thing that we say all the time here at PAL is, you know, sports are enough, but we're more than sports. And having, you know, the exposure to different cultures. Like, we take kids on trips all around the world. Last year we took kids on a trip to Dubai. This year we're going on a trip to South Africa, Johannesburg, South Africa. So it's just like having that that range of experiences, not just going from one sport to the next, but going from a sporting program or an athletic program to like our character development programs, like the GEMS series or our Project AMG program, or then going into some of our STEM programming where we're teaching coding, we're teaching kids how to fly drones and access and leverage new technology. The thing that I love about technology, because that's like kind of a passion area for me. So I'll be honest, like I'm going to spend a minute talking about it, is the future of work is all going to be, it's already, you know, a tech, every industry is already either a tech industry or a quasi-tech industry. And that's not changing, you know. And so giving kids access to sports is great. You know, never going to take anything away from that. I played football, ran track, and it opened doors up for me. You know, I was able to go to school on a full ride scholarship, you know, go to college on a full ride scholarship. So it's great for, it's great. It's a great thing to offer. But then in addition to giving the, providing those academic resources and those academic programs, you know, reading literacy, financial literacy, digital literacy, you know, all of our literacy initiatives are great. And it just gives our kids, you know, just another sort of leg up, I think, in life, compared to kids that may participate in athletic programs in other leagues, but those other leagues don't offer all the same enrichment programming.
Yeah, it's the pluses. It's, you have athletics, plus you have educational, plus you have, and I think that it not only gives a great foundation for kids, mm-hmm. but then it makes them more well-rounded people. Mm-hmm. I wanted you to quickly touch on the Youth Voice Council and what that is, and just tell us a little bit about that briefly.
Yeah, so our Youth Voice Council, YVC, is our... is a group of young people, ages 13 to 17, and they essentially work with the PAL staff to help us develop strategies for the organization, to help us sort of assess the quality of different programs or consider new programs that we might want to bring. Like, for instance, we're having conversations with our Youth Voice Council about bringing back our broadcast and journalism program, or starting a new program, our mock trial team, debate team.
Awesome.
You know, so we kind of use them to get that perspective of what
they need.
What they need, and also how to execute, you know, how to develop the programs in a way that's going to engage kids like them. So, you know, their perspectives are invaluable to, you know, the key decisions that we have to make when we're designing or implementing new programs. And YVC is also responsible for this upcoming teen wellness initiative with our retreat and our walk coming up at the end of this month. I'd love to take a moment to
share
a little bit about that. On Tuesday, May 30th, 2023, starting at 9 a.m., we're going to start the day off with a walk from Campus Martius in downtown Detroit. We're going to walk about a mile and a half to the corner ballpark where we are now. And once we get to the ballpark, that's where our second half of the day starts, where we'll engage them through a retreat. So this is kind of like a wellness, mental health wellness retreat, where we'll have a variety of different games going on the field, you know, fun things, flag football, dodgeball, mm-hmm. soccer, you name it, we'll have it. But then in addition to that, we'll have a bunch of different wellness activities. So things that focus on mindfulness, like yoga and guided meditation, things mm-hmm. that focus on dealing with stress, overwhelm, and trauma, like art therapy workshops, and we'll have art therapy workshops, sound or audio therapy workshops. We'll have, you know, like I mentioned, yoga and the guided meditation, but we'll also have just like fun stuff,
yeah.
like bounce houses, face painting, photo booths. We'll have a DJ for the whole day.
And it's great that you're able to get that feedback from the kids that are actual participants.
Yeah.
Justin Cook, thank you for your time, for everything you do here, and sitting down with us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, almost out of time. 15 seconds. Thoughts on tomorrow?
Hey, they got to come ready to play. It's that simple.
All right. I think they're getting it done, too. I just do. And you have any thoughts on crowd size? Bigger? Smaller?
I think it'll be similar.
Okay.
Similar. And don't forget, this building here, underrated. Great.
Oh, underrated.
Great oatmeal raisin cookies, too.
Oh, all right. That's going to do it for us.